The following audio is via a Skype call.
Welcome to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. You'll learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness and explore the deeper knowledge within. Welcome home. Now here's your host, Dr. Kelly Neff.
Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Kelly Neff, and you are listening to Lucid Planet Radio here on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience healing, inspiration, and knowledge. Because every week on the show, we have some of the most gifted scientists, healers, speakers, and authors who are here to help you become the greatest version of yourself. And remember, you can find out more on thelucidplanet.com and stream all of our podcasts for free, over 100 episodes on lucidplanetradio.com, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, everything. And you can also connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching for The Lucid Planet. I am here with Lucid Planet the first Wednesday of every month at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. And I just want to remind you guys again to stay tuned for my new show and book project, working title Slut Logic, which is all about the topic of sexual consciousness and empower people's authentic sexuality through knowledge and power. All right. It is Halloween time, guys, which is, of course, my favorite time of the year. I always do a show on magic this week. I have had some amazing guests in the past, like Judica Illis, talking with me about witchcraft and the history of Samhain. But today, I have something totally new and exciting for you that we are going to talk about, which is something called queer magic. I mean, how lit does that sound? Specifically, okay, we're going to talk about LGBTQ magic and mysticism from all across the world. And if you've been to any of my workshops or talks, you know that the sexual wisdom traditions are some of my favorite topics. So I'm really delighted to be talking about this today. And our guide, who is going to illuminate for us all things queer magic, is author Thomas Prower, who has just completed a book on this topic. And I got to take a peek at the manuscript this weekend, and it was super enlightening. Now, Thomas has had quite the life. He's done everything from working as a liaison to the French government in South America, to living in the Amazon, to bartending at a well-known gay bar in Los Angeles, to being external relations director for the Red Cross, to working as a mortician, to screenwriting for porn, which sounds like my personal favorite of this list. and currently he's writing and living in Las Vegas. So it sounds like an amazing life story. And I'm really excited to share with us his dynamic perspective about deities, heroes, and historical figures who have embodied the queer spirit across history and the world. So on that note, let's please give a warm welcome to Thomas Prower on the show. Hi, Thomas.
Hello. Hello.
Wonderful to have you on. What a nice life story.
Especially when it said so well like that. I was getting excited. I was like, oh my God, I did all that.
Right? You're like the most interesting man in the world or something.
With my Dos Equis bottle right here.
Exactly. So you've done all this stuff. What got you into writing specifically?
Writing was that thing that it just that innate passion I had in me since I was really young. And I remember I used to watch the Power Rangers, and after, you know, the 30-minute episode, I'd be like, I want more. But, you know, there's no DVDs. There's no real VHSs back then. So I had to, like, find a way to do it. So I would grab my crayons and just write whatever story I could think of to keep the adventure going.
Who was your favorite Power Ranger?
My favorite was the Yellow Ranger, because when I was a kid, I had this fascination with yellow. It was, like, brightest color. It was the happiest color. So I like Trini. That was my girl.
I like the Green Ranger.
Tommy.
I know, Tommy. Anyway, but before we like digress, because I think we could probably talk about that for a while. So you just knew that you wanted to create worlds and build story in your life, even when you were young. And you kind of ended up living a very storied life in terms of like how dynamic all your experiences have been. Going from all these different areas and professions, do you just get bored easily, or are you just always like looking for something new, or like what kind of inspired you to try all these different things in your life?
No, it's not a sense of boredom. It's a sense that there was this one time where I had this very real near-death experience, but it wasn't like, oh, I almost got hit by a car. I had a month where I really honestly thought I was going to die, and I thought it was going to be my very last month, and my whole worldview changed. I was much younger then, and I thought all this stuff I've never done.
Yes.
And then when I, you know, found out that no, I'm going to live, you know, hopefully a long time, that everything was just more precious, and I realized how short life could be and that tomorrow's not guaranteed. So I was just really had to be really industrious and just do everything now when I can, because who knows what could happen. So I've just been ultra productive since that experience.
Amen to that. So, I mean, and I love that. I've had a near-death experience as well that kind of motivated me to just like be fearless and do what I want to do. So I know how that is. And I also know it's hard to describe to people who haven't been in that situation, but it's true. You almost see your life flash before your eyes and you're like, my life sucked. I need to do more.
Yes.
Yeah. So is that kind of what inspired you to become a mortician?
No, mortician, I actually fell into it accidentally. I went to college. I did a bunch of stuff, but I wasn't finding a job that was really taking me anywhere or wanted to keep me on for a long time, because this was in the throes of the Great Recession.
Yeah.
You know, there were layoffs. I had this, you know, college degree, which said I could theoretically do something, but I didn't have the experience to say I've done it. So I was this gamble in hiring, and I was, you know, student loans come due, life comes due. And I actually grew up right across the street from a mortuary in Los Angeles. And you know, I was desperate for a job. I was living at home and I was like, look, you need to hire me because I have no excuse to be late. I live right across the street. You can call me, like, just desperate to get that job. And they're like, perfect. All right, we'll have you help out in funerals. And
I just grew from there.
Yeah.
Did it creep you out, or were you kind of into it?
No, I was kind of into it. I've always been kind of into the macabre, because, you know, I grew up with the Addams Family, the Beetlejuice era,
yeah.
Interview with the Vampire, like that whole 90s.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's dark. Like my jam, dude. Yeah, sorry.
No, so that was my experience. So I enjoyed it. It was fascinating for me.
So I wanted to ask you, being a mortician in LA, did you come across a lot of really lit New Age practices, like people burying themselves in mushroom suits that grow into mushrooms, or like hand glass blowing their ashes into necklaces, you know, like all this crazy stuff that's going on? Did you come across a lot of that?
No, and I so wish I would. The problem is, you know, and this is my like aside, the problem is that the funeral industry is very old fashioned, and at the end of the day, it's a business and it's out to make money. Mm-hmm. So they only promote stuff that's the most expensive. So usually have quote unquote traditional funerals with embalmings, which is super expensive. And then you have the cremations, but people don't know there's a whole wide range of options. There's liquid cremation with water that uses no fossil fuels. Whoa. You can be buried out in the desert and naturally decompose back into the earth. You can become part of a Great Barrier Reef. And there's so much stuff out there, but
awesome.
But people don't want to talk about death. It scares them that they never explore those options. And the funeral home's not going to tell you about them because that takes away from the bottom line.
So this sounds like some advice for people as they're thinking about this.
Look into it now while you can, because you don't want those decisions to be made, you know, when you're in that hospital bed or by family members who are already overcome with so much grief that they just want the simplest thing done. And the simplest thing is just what everyone knows.
Yeah, I've always said, don't put me in a coffin in the ground, like burn me up, send me out somewhere else. Like I, and you know, my Jewish family doesn't love that. They don't like cremation, but that's just my personal preference. I don't want to be in a box in the ground, you know, but I like the idea of like becoming part of a tree or part of nature, you know, something like that. That seems kind of like more naturally what we would have done, you know, pre all of this industrialization, right?
Oh yeah.
Or maybe they would just eat us. I don't know. So, but speaking of like pre-industrialization, you also kind of lived in the Amazon jungle, correct?
Correct.
And how did that influence your career trajectory and kind of your interests and what you wanted to write about?
It made me a lot more focused on people in general, because when I started all these like globe trekking world adventures, I was more of the Jane Goodall aspirer. I wanted to study animals, live among them, learn their ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I went to the Amazon, which is loaded with that, and just working with my guides there, because I was speaking Spanish and who was my interpreter to someone who spoke the native languages. And we would go to these, you know, National Geographic like thatched hut villages. Cool. Right up against the banks of the Amazon, and you meet all these people, and it's just so fascinating. I remember talking to the kids while we were reloading the canoe with supplies, and they were learning over radio Algebra 3, and they were high school level. And what? I was like, oh my God, I never took that class. How on earth are you learning it out here via radio? You know, and it's, and they have the paint on their faces and wearing like the grass skirts and tribal gear, and they're doing stuff modern high school kids are struggling doing.
Okay, that's fascinating. So it kind of like warps your view of everything, you know, like from your culture is the right way to do it and other people aren't doing it right. Then you start thinking maybe they actually have something going on that I don't even understand from my culture.
Right. I mean, you don't know what you don't know.
No, that's exactly. We're going to take a quick break, Thomas. I feel like I could just hear your stories all day long, and that would be amazing. And we could go have a coffee and some wine and just chat. But since we have a limited amount of time, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk with Thomas Prower all about his brand new book, Queer Magic, just in time for Halloween. So stick with us. We'll be right back after the break.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
Tune in to E3 Influence Radio. Own your impact. Master your world. In this new hit show, Sarah Luce, empowerment coach and spiritual mentor, teaches us how to achieve our greatest potential to positively affect everything and everyone. The time is now to enlighten our minds, empower our hearts, and take energized action to raise the consciousness of our planet. Sarah shows us how with simple, easy-to-implement steps. To find out more about Sarah Luce and her E3 Influence program, visit saraluce.com.
Do you believe you are meant to live with more joy, but you're just not sure how to get it? What does the phrase, give me the joy, make you feel? Join me, Lynn Horde, every second and fourth Thursday, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, on the Give Me the Joy Show, as I take you on a journey to peel back the layers so you can take back your joy. To find out more about my work as the Joy Coach, including my popular programs, Joy School and Joy at Work, visit lynnhorde.com.
Are you done being afraid to jump into the life that's waiting for you? Are you ready for a real shift? I invite you to tune in every Tuesday with me, Tracy L, on the Tracy L Clark Show, where we will teach you how to live your extraordinary life. At 8 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, where I will provide the tools and the steps needed to help you transcend perceived limitations and move forward with an extraordinary life. For more information, visit me at tracylclark.com.
To see your life from an angel's perspective, book a personal consultation with Claire Candy Huff, angelic walk-in angel Ariel at Angel Healing House. Candy provides intuitive counseling, Reiki, and angel readings in person in Los Angeles or nationally and internationally via phone or Skype. She will channel the practical tools you need to transform your life. Call now, 831-277-3716, or visit angelhealinghouse.com.
If you're dealing with fear and anxiety, you've probably noticed that the more you fight these emotions, the stronger they seem to get. Dr. Friedemann Schaub, the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution, explains that instead of suppressing, we need to identify and resolve the deeper, subconscious root causes of fear and anxiety. His personal breakthrough program has helped thousands worldwide to overcome their emotional challenges. To learn more, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com and schedule your free consultation with Dr. Schaub now.
Man, got to get back. I need some get back. Pay back.
We are back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and my guest today is Thomas Prower, who is talking with us all about queer magic. Before we continue, though, I just want to make sure, Thomas, that everyone knows how to contact you to find out about your books, your activities, the projects you're working on, and to get in touch with you.
Sure. I know the best way to get a hold of me is usually via the, you know, the main website, which is www.thomasprower.com. And then catch me on Facebook /Thomas Prower. I'm not really on Twitter or Instagram, but I'm sure I'm there. Don't expect a response on those, but Facebook. And if you like any of my books, they have their own Facebook page with their own growing communities for queer magic, La Santa Muerte, and an upcoming one, Morbid Magic.
Ooh, gosh, this all sounds perfect for Halloween. I'm right? Loving it. So let's talk about the first thing, which is queer magic. What? Now, when I saw a press release about this and I was like, must do a show. I just loved it so much. Now, did you come up with this term queer magic, or did you kind of like channel it from other places? And what the hell is it? Queer magic.
No, it's funny that you asked that. It's that's all marketing, which is essential because
Yes. You
have this. There's so much LGBT, the letters, and it can get confusing, especially in a search. But the word queer, hardly anything starts with a Q, so it's more easily findable. But it's also a little transgressive because the whole community is not yet okay with the word queer because, you know, the past connotations
yes.
with it.
It's reclaiming a derogatory word like slut, which is what I'm doing on my project.
Exactly.
Not everyone's okay with it, but.
Reclaiming my word, reclaiming my word.
Yes.
I mean, so it's a little transgressive. So it gets you your attention. It's there and bam. But what queer magic is it's magic in its most basic sense, you know, manipulating the unseen forces of the world and the universe to create something that benefits you or whatever your intention may be, but in a very queer focused way.
So how does that differ from, quote, regular magic?
Right. It doesn't, at the end of the day, magic is magic. You know, that fire is fire, and depending on how you use it. Magic is magic, but the way you react to the world, the way you contact things, it's through your own experience, because through your eyes, through your senses, through your upbringing, you perceive the world differently in a way no one else can. So when you're trying to reach out to like the forces of the universe, the queer eye sees things different and sees the world around them different than the straight eye, different from everyone else who's lived a very different experience. So going through queer magic protocol, it's easier for the queer person to get in touch with the universe because it's like looking through the same tinted colored glasses.
Absolutely. And that makes a lot of sense because our society and our culture and the experiences that we have, I'm a psychologist, so I know how much it shapes our brain and our mental schemas. So I think what you're talking about is like working within the schemas and the framework to deconstruct some of these notions that keep us feeling oppressed or different and use them for our own growth and enlightenment.
Exactly. That was very well said.
Oh, thank you. I don't know. What did I say? So in that sense, like straight people practicing queer magic, you know, can they, should they? I think what you're saying, it's just a different way of looking at the world, right?
Right. I mean, really like the whole queer explosion of queer acceptance and being able to talk about it is fairly recent. So Through most of magical history, queer people have used straight spells and they've been successful. True. This queer magic just makes it a little easier for them. So straight people can use queer magic all they like. It, you know, it'll be effective, but probably not the best route for them, but mm-hmm. fascinating if they want to see that other perspective and look through a different lens.
You know, I think this book is so timely exactly because of what you said, is this like queer explosion. I mean, I, even when I was in high school in the 90s, it was very much taboo to be gay or lesbian or bi, and definitely trans. Yeah. You know, you'd be like the one, I was like the one bi girl at my school and everyone thought I was a weirdo. And it's just very amazing nowadays that I talk to kids. It's been like, you know, now I'm double the age of like a kid who got out of high school, which is old. But, you know, they all have like gender fluid identities now. Like all these kids are like, oh, yeah, my pronoun is Z and I don't really identify as male or female. And this one's trans and like everyone's gay. And maybe not everyone, but like the level of visibility and acceptance in the generations below ours versus ours and the generations above us is staggering.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so much more apparent. And, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And with all these youngsters being more open, being more visible about it, you realize how pervasive it always was.
Yes. And I just wonder if it's some kind of queer magic that now suddenly it's like, bam, you know, we have so much more representation. And yeah, there's still a lot, there is still a lot of ways to go. Okay. It's not like we're, everything is complete equality, but I mean, even with women, there's still a lot of ways to go, you know? So like we all, there's always going to be a fight happening against the patriarchy to a certain extent. But again, as a side note, it does seem almost like maybe the queer magic has been working over all this time. And maybe in some cultures and societies, it was always there to begin with. And it never really left, just in kind of the major, you know, monotheistic religion traditions, there was a lot of suppression, of course, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And I'm wondering if you could help just explain kind of on a social cultural trend perspective, because I know you talk a lot about this in the book, kind of what happened. We had these indigenous cultures that were very queer friendly, and then we have the big monotheistic religions come in. Why have they always seemed so traditionally anti-queer?
It's, you know, it's that age-old thing of just being about power, because at humans' most basic, it's our primal urges, and sex is one of them. And when you're a very, not unadvanced society, but just a very more in touch with nature society, mm-hmm. You see all the differences. You see all the masculine and feminine and the blend and everything. So you realize how natural it is. You see it in the natural world. You see it in humans. But in order to insert some sort of control, you have to define what that power is. And if you want to define the power as yourself, so if, you know, the men in charge of the church or what it may be, the faith, mm-hmm. they want to be in power. So only things that look like them are suddenly is what has the power.
Absolutely. So, I've also heard that it's an attempt to, like, because they, you know, the way that Christianity is like so anti-sex in general, a way to distinguish itself from the religions that came before it too, right? Like the paganism and Greco-Roman religions, which were very sexually open. And,
it's true. It's very true. And funny you say that because it in the book it says it too, but that was a big part of the Jewish queerness throughout their whole journey mm-hmm. because when they didn't have their own land and they didn't have their own set identity, they were very much okay with queerness. But then when they had to distinguish themselves as different and they had a, you know, more of a state, it wasn't okay anymore. And you see throughout the history how it gets okay when they have to define themselves and not okay when they are defined.
Mm. Which goes back to this whole idea of categorization and why like anything binary and dichotomous is such a problem because it doesn't reflect reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it makes me wonder and think about, we're talking about magic and religion. Is magic a religion to you, or do you also have a religion that you integrate magic with? if that makes sense. Because people always think magic is like, you know, you're like worshiping Satan, but that's not. And even Satanism has a totally bad name, and it's not the way people think it is. But anyway, what do you think about that question?
I mean, I don't think magic is a religion in and of itself. It's just a way of interacting with the world. So like, even if in a Catholic sense, if you pray, that's a form of magic. It's a form of getting in touch with the divine. Yeah. For me, no. I try to utilize magic when I can, but really for me, my faith probably is more of a Taoist thing than anything. I see the balance in the world and just studying all these cultures and like traveling all these places I've been, to me, in my eyes, it seems the most true because it's based on nature. Mm-hmm. It's just going with nature's rules. And if you go against nature's rules, you're going to have a bad time. So there's nothing saying do this, don't do this. It's saying, look, this is how nature does it. Nature's always surviving. This is how it gets done. Take it easy and just do it like that. If you don't, you're going to run into problems.
And has that helped also with your understanding of queerness, or does Taoism have any special teachings about queerness per se?
It does. It actually, well, it doesn't have any specific teachings, but by not having specific teachings, which Taoism does a lot of, mm-hmm. It allows you to just see the natural world. I mean, any question you ask Taoism and they'll just like point to a rock or point to a tree or a river and be like, there's your answer.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah, and then, you know, so you intuitively try to figure out what it is. So by pointing to nature, it exists in nature. The whole binary of this and that only, it doesn't really exist. Everything's a spectrum. A tree isn't just a seed in a tree. It's all the in-between phases. And so it's just accepting the moment of what you are without labels. Because once I say I'm this, I'm immediately saying I'm not everything else. And I'm excluding myself from so many opportunities. So by not putting any labels on myself, I am everything. That's the way I like to see it.
Oh my gosh, I love that. That makes me feel really happy. But I completely agree. And again, from a psychological standpoint, same idea. It's our brain's natural inclination because it's processing so much information to store it in these categories or schemas that we can use as heuristics later. But that doesn't necessarily make it true. So we ask about like where stereotyping and judgment and all that stuff comes from. It's because like we're just pulling heuristics out of our environment and it's easier for our brain to use them as a rule of thumb. But that doesn't really define who we are. And I think when you do find yourself on a spiritual path, I used to be very black and white, yes or no, right or wrong. And I see everything now as a continuum and I guess shades of gray, because the more you learn about human behavior, the more you realize that we could be anyone, you know?
Yeah.
And you never know how you're going to react until you're in their shoes, but we're not as different as we think we are. And I like that Taoism. I'm going to have to look more into that. It's really nice. I mean, I guess from your perspective, and I have to ask, you know, you've done so much research, right? And it's really cool to know so much and then decide this is what I believe in based on all of these things that I know. But how on earth, as a writer, how do you get all of this information together? Because I'm a researcher, writer too. I would love to know, what is your strategy for kind of synthesizing all of this information from like every culture across the world and time and space?
Oh, right. That's the question I ask myself. You know, it's the general, you do the basics of the research and you find out what's actually, you know, real research and not, you know, a buzz list top 10 things of queerness in the past, which may or may not be true, but it's fascinating.
Wikipedia.
Yeah. I mean, you look for the main sources, but the best thing is to really just talk to people, because that whole Kevin Bacon degrees of separation, everyone knows somebody.
True.
So if you're just a good person in the world and you talk to people and you try to treat every person as a learning experience, even if you don't think you have anything to learn from them, they'll have a connection or they'll know someone who can get you in touch with someone. And with that in the internet, you're talking to people all over the world, whether it be Skype, WhatsApp, anything else.
It's true. So you're just getting out there, getting after it.
It's just being open to all the possibilities and just putting yourself out there in a place where the possibilities can reach you and not closing you off. Oh, it's not in a book. at this right. specific library. I have no way to know.
Right. So write to people. Well, that's, thank you. That's really great advice for what I'm working on too, because sometimes you do hit a dead end and you're like, there's nothing published, because I'm academia, PhD. So I'm like, okay, it has to be published in a peer reviewed journal, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then it's not. And I don't know how do I get the information? And I don't want to just give hypothesis and conjecture, but you're right. Talk to people. Qualitative data is still data. You know, that's awesome. Okay. On that note, we are going to take a very quick break, and Tomas Prower is coming back on after the break to talk with us about queer magic. Specifically, we're going to start talking about the deities and heroes of queer magic, as well as shamanic cultures and different constructions of gender and sexual orientation around the world. So you're not going to want to miss this. Stay with us and we will be right back.
Demystifying the journey on From Here to There Radio with your host, Diane Garris. Tune in every third Wednesday, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com as Diane helps you get from where you are now to the life you envision. Get ready to get unstuck and move forward. Every show features a new special segment, New Age Notes, demystifying hot, metaphysical topics of the day. For more information or to work with Diane, visit DianeGarris.com.
Dream on, fly high, and live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Laura Meeks guides you in finding your unique gifts and bringing them to life. As a certified life coach, speaker, and veteran bomber pilot for the U.S. Air Force, Laura knows how to follow a dream. She is ready to support you so you can dream on, fly high, and live adventurously. For more information on Laura and her work, visit flyhighliving.com.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
Have you been searching for a push to step out and share your gifts with the world? Allow Charlene Hess to empower you to start shedding the layers of your ego that are holding you back and begin feeling connected to your heart so that you can shine your unique divine light and share your gifts with the world. Tune in to The Charlene Hess Show, Living on Your Heart's Edge, every third Friday at noon Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit CharleneHess.com.
All right, we are back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and I have my guest, Tomas Prower, here today talking about his new book, Queer Magic. Now, Tomas, we've talked a lot about travel and culture and society, and you lived in the Amazon, and you got access to very tribal people. And one of the things that, you know, you learn when you're traveling, they always say when you travel, you opens up your mind to the rest of the world. And a lot of these constructs like gender and sexual orientation can be viewed so differently. And I was just wondering, based on your research and your experience, if you can give us some examples of cultures where gender and sexual orientation are viewed so differently as they are in the West or in America.
Yeah, I mean, what we grew up in here, it's only applicable to here at this specific time. Throughout history in the world, it's been completely different. I mean, one modern one we all know is in India, there's the third gender of the Hijra.
Hijra, yeah.
Wherein they're not men, they're not women, they're not trans. It's a completely separate gender that doesn't exist, you know, here in the United States. And there's different laws which regulate that gender, prevent that gender. And so when you have a topic of discussion in India, which is very back and forth, of is queerness okay? No one talks about the Hijra because the Hijra aren't queer.
Hmm.
Even though, you know, technically people would consider them biological males acting and dressing like women.
almost like a drag queen in America.
Right, right. But it's a completely separate thing. So they're not even considered in the spectrum of queerness in India, really. Modern, you know, that's the thing. In modern India, trying to get queer rights, you have to put the label queer on something in order to get it legislatively passed, as we're going to protect this specific thing. So they're trying to include the Hydra in it to get their numbers up and have more representation. But it's a weird mix of ancient ideas of what queerness is and the necessity of having modern legislation, having to put a label on it and where those two collide.
Hmm. And isn't it true that India just finally made homosexuality legal?
Just finally. I mean, it's been back and forth. It was legal briefly, and then it was, you know, outlawed again, and then just now it was legalized again.
Awesome.
And hopefully it stays this time. But then again, what is queerness in India? When we read that, we assume it's like the way it is here.
Yes.
But does that include the Hydra? Does that include what we would consider trans people? Every country has their own definition of queerness. So when we read these stories online or in the newspaper, we're reading it through our own lens.
It's a very
our
good
queerness
point.
Might not be their queerness.
There is definitely a relativist perspective to all of this that I think it's important to keep in mind. And then you can contrast it to, you talked about in your book, like shamanic cultures that don't use any gender labels for anyone.
Right. I mean, especially in Siberia, it's just not really a thing. It's you're just this person, and whatever happens, it's just part of nature. It's very Tao. It's very Tao.
Yeah.
But there's no labels. And can you think of a society that just exists where everyone's themselves, they do what they do, they like what they like, and there's no labels in it? And even in the shamanic cultures that has a definition between man and woman, the magical workers, the medicine men, the shamans themselves, the most powerful ones are ones without labels, because it goes to that thing where if I say I'm a male shaman, then I have access to the magical spiritual powers of masculinity, females, femininity. But if you don't say, if you don't limit yourself, you have the whole universe because that's what you are.
Yes. Well, and even the Greeks used to believe that with hermaphrodite.
Indeed. And even in ancient Greece and Rome, queerness was different. People like to think, oh, those were decadent times when queerness was okay. It really wasn't, because the idea of being a homosexual or a lesbian was bad. But queerness was something you did. It wasn't a noun. It wasn't an adjective. It was solely a verb.
It was a verb. Good
so you
point.
Can be straight, but have quote unquote, you know, homosexual sex and not be homosexual, because that was a verb, not an adjective. And it's fascinating to see how the world has seen what queerness is, what sex is throughout the world. It makes you think, what is queerness? If it's been so many different things, our idea of it now might change in 200 years. Who knows?
Totally. I feel like there's definitely going to be some sex with robots, computer stuff, virtual girlfriends. That's going to come in there somehow, you know? I don't know how. Yeah. I always think about, like, in the future, queerness will be having sex with humans when you have all these available sex robots. But anyway, that's another story. But, you know, I loved how your book really traveled the whole globe through space and time. It's very ambitious, really. but there's so many different kind of deities and heroes. Which region or which area and which time was kind of the most interesting or appealing to you, if you had to pick?
God, if I had to pick, I'd probably say that the you know, just growing up, you know, a lot of us take the ancient Greeks and the ancient Roman history. That's the one we know best. And to suddenly learn or do the deep exploration and find out, whoa, there's actually a lot more queerness in it than you thought.
Oh,
you know, it's that iconoclastic mind-blown moment where it's fascinating learning something new, but it's a whole nother thing. Realize that you were not told the whole truth.
Yes.
So the Greek and Roman ones, the one in Christianity, the ones in Judaism, mm-hmm. The ones that our Western world is really familiar with, to find out, peel back the truth, that was fascinating.
Yes, I completely agree with you. I used to teach human sexuality like many, many years ago when I was finishing my doctoral degree. I did it for like almost a decade. It's odd how time flies, but that was one of my first classes, was kind of like the history of sex a little bit. And there was a slide in my PowerPoint that said, in ancient Greece, male-male relationships were the highest form of love. And everyone's jaw like hit the ground. And they were like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, no, this is actually true. Like, it was a political thing too. It was it was a hierarchy. So I love that though. And like Pompeii, you know, and like, that's not queerness. That's just like, well, there might've been some queerness, but there was just a lot of sex in everywhere, you know, phallic carvings on all the streets and the buildings. And it was covered by that volcano. So, you know, no one could, the Christian missionaries after, they couldn't go and like take it all down. So like thousands of years later, they take out this statue and it's a man having sex with a goat. And, you know, whoever the British king was at the time, like, fainted, and they all freaked out, and they were like, what did we just find? Anyway, but it's preserved, you know? Yeah, so we don't know. People were freaks throughout history. You know, you know, we think things are weird now, but they've always been kind of weird, and that's cool, you know? I don't really have a problem with it. Let me ask you then, as well, if you have a deity or a hero that you identify with the most?
Ooh, that's a good one. I've actually never been asked that one. God, deity who I identify with the most. Oh, Lord. I'm going to have to get back to you on that unless I pause too long.
No, that's fine.
But I know one that was really fascinating was Athena for me, because
yes.
I've always found her as like super cool, super badass, you know, woman.
Yes.
A very tough woman, a very tough woman. And while still maintaining her femininity, and, you know, me being more of like the Ravenclaw-esque kind of a person, like her wisdom, it's like, I identify with that.
Yes.
You know, I feel like I'm a smart person like her too. But
I love that.
Right? But when you look into it, and you look, you know, read all the myths and you see all the history on it, she's a very asexual person or deity. Yeah. I mean, she's feminine. She's prone to feminine vanities. You know, she lost a beauty contest and got upset. Then the Trojan War happened.
Yeah.
She couldn't weave as well as somebody. So there goes a curse. But at the same time, she always sides with the male patriarchy. I mean, one of her, you know, priestesses comes to her and is essentially, you know, violated. And she's like, oh, well, that's your fault. Why did you put yourself in that position?
Oh,
male gods. Like, yeah. And she wears masculine, you know, armor. And she's never sexually attracted to anyone. With all the stuff the Greek deities were doing, she doesn't have this ounce of sexuality. So she's masculine, but she's feminine, but she's not sexual. So it's this weird unraveling of, it's not just this tough woman who's also smart. It's this ambiguously, androgynously asexual deity who had a lot of power back then and was revered for it.
Mm. That must be, you know, your inner Taoist, like just looking for that balance in people.
It's the lens through which I see the world and really interpret it.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And then, you know, like on the flip side, one of the things that I loved was thinking about Rumi in Persia, right? And he was so beloved and kind of still is. And yet now modern day Iran is so unbelievably homophobic. Like, what happened there?
It's really just the insertion of the male patriarchy and the male power. And the interesting thing is that the people think like Islam is this one united group, but you know, like any other major religion, it has its denominations. And Rumi was part of this real fringe, very feminine oriented branch of Islam, where usually the normal standard of Islam is God is outside of you and it's this masculine being and you reach out to him. But to Rumi's Sufi faith, masculinity was something inside of us. And so when you look at someone and you see someone nice and you're making love to them, that's making love to God. That's communicating with God. And so he found this intense divine power in this other man. And a lot of his poetry on love and loving God through loving men and his sex poetry was written based on this relation with this man that he had. And, you know, he was teased at the time he's, you know, not he's now in modern Iran, but just the openness of seeing God through genderless eyes and seeing it through sex. It was revolutionary then as it is now. But an interesting thing about Iran is it's also one of the highest places for transgender surgeries, because the thinking is that being gay is bad. It's bad. But the government actually subsidizes a lot of transitional surgeries for transgender individuals, because if you're a man who has sex with a man, that's bad. But if you get the surgery to turn into a woman and you're still attracted to men, that's okay, because now it's straight.
See, that's the problem with the binary. It's like, okay, so changing your gender, now suddenly you've changed your sexual orientation.
It's just so weird the way humans play these mental gymnastics to get around the binary, and this is this and that is that.
Yep. And again, no problem or shade to having sex reassignment surgery. But it's just doing it, you know, psychologically, you know, doing it for the right reasons, you know, changing your body versus just wanting to change who you have sex with, you know what I mean? But it's funny because in LA, there were several, have you been to like the Iranian gay bars in LA? There's a bunch of them.
I'm familiar with them. Oh
yeah. Because I guess, you know, if you don't want to do that surgery, you know, you have to leave. And you know, it's very interesting though, because again, we're seeing like the transition of culture, and like, this was like considered like the most advanced early culture on the globe, right? When we're looking at Mesopotamia and Sumeria and all of that. And I wanted to ask you too, before we take a break, did your research take things like you have a section on the cradle of civilization. Was it hard to find information about queerness in that time? And what did you find?
It wasn't so much hard to find information, because a lot of the information is just, here's this information, and it's kind of dry.
Yeah.
But it's when you read it, like if you read these, like in ancient Egypt, and there's these two men buried in the same sarcophagus with, you know, in an embrace. We can understand that they were probably lovers, and there's artwork around the temple tomb of them kissing. We would assume that, you know, they're lovers. You know, it just makes the most common sense. But back then when they found him, they thought, oh, look at these conjoined twins, because nothing else makes sense. So it's just
funny.
Yeah, it's just taking these dry facts and reading it with the knowledge and insight that we have now. And so just by being open-minded and not trying to read into it, but like, what is the most obvious answer? You know, it's the Occam's razor. It's
yes.
Which one takes the least amount of mental gymnastics to come to a conclusion with? That's probably the right answer.
Were you following at all the story of that sarcophagus they found about a month or two ago that, you know, everyone said was contained something really evil in it, and people were saying, don't open it. And it was just, you know, not a big deal.
it's that whole thing, you know, it's just that it's a good metaphor, because it's this closed box and you don't know what's inside of it. You only know what your imagination projects inside of it. So if your imagination is, oh, it's something horrid and horrible, then that's what's in that box. Like looking at history, it's the lens through which you interpret it and through your mind. But when you open it and you see what it is, it's like, oh, this is what it actually was.
You know, I think like our collective unconscious is so shaped by the mythology that we've been taught or that our society holds true. So it's like the idea of that Pandora's box, or like Eve eating the apple, like don't look over there. Knowledge is scary. Like, you don't want to find out. Bad things will happen. And I'm like, open the damn box. I want to see. Like,
amen. You know, like,
but yeah, it's so funny the way that our perception, it truly is completely rooted in whatever our culture and experiences are. But books like yours and kind of what you're doing, it's helping people see things from a different lens, which I think is very important in terms of our own personal growth and also, like, you know, unity for the human race.
Right. And what I've tried to make sure in my book is that I didn't want it to be a book of just me saying, this is all the research I did.
Right.
You know, like, yes, here are the footnotes so you can check what I'm saying. But also in the book, I invite other people from around the world who contribute, who are queer, and contribute their ideas. So there are stories of queer people who are in India telling their story of what it's like using queer magic in India. People in Vietnam, people in Polynesia, in the Hawaiian Islands, people, you know, in Jewish Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
It's just, it's filled with stories of people who are not my voice in order to make it more of a complete community piece.
I think that's so important. And you said you found them just by asking around and looking?
It's that degrees of separation. I talk to someone, I'm like, hey, I'm doing this book project. Do you know someone? And like, I don't, but I know someone who knows someone who knows someone. Let me get you in touch.
So awesome.
Yeah. So it's once you send out the beacon and you're open to it and you just follow where it leads.
Yep. I love that. That's good advice. And that actually applies to a lot of things. Wow. Okay. We have to take one more break. And then Tomas Prower and I are going to wrap up this wonderful show on queer magic. When we return, we're going to talk about La Santa Muerte, the Mexican deity of the death, since it has just been Dia de los Muertos. So stick with us and we will be right back to wrap up the show.
Do it, baby.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Would you like your next chapter to be free from fear and angst? Tune in to Your Next Chapter Radio, navigating through life's transitions with Shelley Ryan the fourth Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Shelley's contagious enthusiasm guides you through life's transitions deliberately, mindfully, and funnily. For Your Next Chapter coaching or to listen, visit YourNextChapterCoaching.com or call 602-617-8351. Next!
Calling all ladies. Are you struggling with neck, back, shoulder pain, or postural issues? You actually might have a related bra problem. Talk to Maria Monti at the Healthy Bra Company. She is a professional postural therapist who offers custom fitted, custom altered bras in 2,500 size combinations specific to your body type, shape, size, anatomical features, and breast weight. Call Maria today to find out more at 360-815-3205.
Welcome back to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and I am here with Tomas Prower talking all about queer magic. We've been talking about deities and heroes across queer magic folklore, and it was just Dia de los Muertos. And I wanted to ask you, Tomas, what you learned from La Santa Muerte, the Mexican folk deity of death.
I mean, she's my personal patron goddess, so I learn everything from her.
Yes.
But she's also the de facto saint of queerness in the Mexican culture, because you know, you take death, you know, which I know familiarly, and death doesn't judge anyone. You could be rich, old, young, good person, bad person, death will come for you. So when working with the deity of death, she has no judgment of you. So all the outsiders, the misfits, the outcasts of society, they look to her because they feel that they can't reach out to God because God's going to judge them in a Catholic sense. But here's death, and death doesn't judge. So they can ask, they can do queer magic with her. They can ask for the same-sex lover. But so it's really nice in that way to have this deity who doesn't judge you any way whatsoever.
And that's beautiful.
it really helps, because in the Santa Muerte community, you try to emulate that non-judgment. So there's a community growing. And you can't really talk about Santa Muerte, because if you go around saying, well, I worship death, you're going to get a lot extra looks than, you know, saying, you know, I'm queer.
And
so a lot of people develop these communities. And so we have online groups where people just, in the devotion of Santa Marta, they talk about it, and you can be queer. You can be whatever you want or however you are, because there's no judgment. And in today's society, that's really important, because even though it is getting better and there are advancements compared to so many years ago, we still need to reach out as a community. And with the blessings of the internet, you can always reach out. You don't even have to be yourself on it. You could take on a persona. Yeah. You could take on a fursona. Who knows? But with the internet, reach out to people. There's groups. There's everything out there if you look for it, because you're not alone. It doesn't matter. As long as you have an internet connection, you're not alone. But even if you don't have that, you're connected with the divine. You're connected with the universal. So go into prayer, go into meditation, see the world, and get in touch with the divine that's already all around you. It's not going to judge you. It is you. It understands you.
Wow. I mean, such a perfect way to end the show. Tomas Prower, queer magic, everyone. You are not alone. And it's true. You always have more of a community and connections, you think, both within you and without you. So if you guys like the show, I encourage you to pick up Tomas's brand new book, Queer Magic. When is it out, Tomas?
It's out June of 2018, so it should be out by now.
Woo! Awesome. There you go. So go check it out and learn how to do some magic. And on that note, I just want to thank you again, Tomas, for coming on the show and sharing such lovely information. I had a blast.
Me too. Thanks.
Thank you. And remember, you guys, you can find out more on thelucidplanet.com and find me on Facebook and Twitter and the gram for all of your needs. And stay tuned for my new sex and relationship project, working title Slut Logic, coming up in the future. Light and love to all of you. Happy Halloween and have a great rest of your week. Bye now.
You've been listening to the hit show, Lucid Planet Radio, with renowned psychologist and author, Dr. Kelly Neff. Tune in as we illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. This hit show will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake up to the greatest version of yourself. Learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness as you explore the deeper knowledge, passion, and purpose within. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for upcoming show topics and to contact Dr. Kelly.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.